This presentation was recorded at DevOps Days 2010 in Mountain View, California. This audio file and others like it are available for free download on InfoQ.com.
So this panel is a little bit different. So for one, I'm moderating. But I think what's so we talked a lot today about what we can do ourselves, how we can affect our team around us. But you know, obviously, we're mostly in this room technologists, right? And good intentions and guerrilla warfare will only get you so far. Sooner or later, you have to make a frontal assault. You want to change your organization, you need political capital, and you need capital. You need money to make that happen. And that means you've got to go to somebody and make a business case. And, you know, DevOps, a bunch of crazy things, got these weird T-shirts. You know, what's this really all about, right? And so we got this panel today of folks who spend in various roles inside and outside of companies, spend their lives trying to convince that Bob that John Wills was talking about, you know, what they need to spend the money and political capital to make something happen. So let's have you guys introduce yourselves, and then we'll get rolling.
Hi, my name's Jody Mulkey. I lead the technology team at Shopzilla, and I guess since I'm the CIO, I am the Bob, maybe. I try not to be most
But you're
days.
Also part of a large, large corporation.
Yes, we also are a part of a much larger kind of corporate IT environment. But so at Shopzilla, we're addicted to feedback loops. We started our business as bizrate.com, and we still operate that business as a online customer sat research company. And so analytics and feedback loops are kind of in our DNA. And so it served us pretty well in helping us manage the technology of our business along with the business of our business. And so I'm looking forward to sharing some of that with you.
So I'm Rolf Russell. I already introduced myself. I work for ThoughtWorks. I lead our build, release, and DevOps group in North America. And a part of my job is to sell our work. We're consultants. So I spend a fair amount of time talking to people who have a little bit of money and want to spend it on DevOps and things like that. So hopefully I can share some ideas from that with everyone.
Hello, I'm Jay Lyman. I'm an analyst with the 451 Group. I cover enterprise software and open source software, and I'm currently working on a report on DevOps, a long-form report, which is one of our more detailed reports with multiple vendors and all, a trend report, actually. And I guess one of the things that I'd say is that I see a lot of parallels in sort of the development of this movement and DevOps to open source software and how that arrived in the enterprise and how executives you know, perceived that and got in the way of it, and then some of them helped usher it in. So, yeah.
I'm Kurt Milne. I'm the managing director of the IT Process Institute. It's actually the company that Gene Kim founded a number of years ago after writing the Visible Ops book. So we are a kind of a membership-driven research consortium, and all we do are empirical data-driven studies, trying to identify what works. So we identify top-performing shops, try to figure out what makes them different, and then we use data to analyze and identify practices that drive top levels of performance. And I'm here because I've done a study recently on kind of change, configure, release type practices. Hopefully there's some learning that can go from the web app into enterprise best practices and enterprise into web app as well.
Okay, so I like to start with the anti-patterns when I talk to folks. And the complaint I get a lot is, hey, you know, with DevOps or with any idea, I got this great idea, the business folks, they won't listen. And I try to stick my head out, I try to tell them there's a better way to do it, and I get hammered. And so I'm not going to stick my head out again because I'm the nail sticking up and I get pounded on. What are some of the, you know, anti-patterns? What are some of the what's the wrong way to go about trying to convince your the business folks that, you know, what you're trying to do with DevOps is, or what we're trying to do with DevOps is a good thing? What are some of the ways that people shouldn't do?
So someone said it here earlier, but don't go into your office on Monday saying, we're going to change the world, because revolution scares people. Evolution, especially if they don't notice it all at once, it actually is just part of how it is. And so I think that the real a really solid approach would be just to start making some small changes over time. And Gene Kim, thank you again for writing that book. We use it religiously, and I bite his rhymes all the time. And given my role in leading both the operations and the development world, I'm actually starting to take some of that into the development world, where, you know, attack the noisiest objects in your world first, right? Because we're not going to hire that many more people, although we are hiring. So, so if we're not hiring more people, we need to buy back time. And how do we buy back time? Is by taking down those objects that really cause the unplanned work. So don't go in trying to start a revolution. Or if you do, just do it quietly and don't call it a revolution.
So you're saying rather than revolution, focus on the things that people consider the noisiest, the squeakiest wheel.
I would say anti-pattern would be not understanding your audience. And there's many different dimensions to that. The most basic dimension is what are their drivers. So don't go in and say DevOps. You know, I don't use the word DevOps when I talk to executives, certainly not in the beginning of the conversation, because nobody's ever heard of it. It'll instantly kind of distance them from you. You want to use terminology they're aware of, and you want to talk about it in terms that are meaningful to them. So I always talk about, you know, cycle time, throughput, you know, things that make sense to the business side. You know, the business side wants to get their features or their changes into production faster. So I talk about that, and I try and relate that to DevOps or to whatever I'm talking about. So don't go in with the terminology that we use with each other. Adjust your terminology to the audience and make sure you're talking about the things that incent them and the reasons that they would care about DevOps. And then gradually you can introduce the concept.
I guess sort of the anti-pattern or what not to do from my perspective would be overlooking maybe some of the existing DevOps synergies or practices within an organization. You know, executives like to hear that something that they're doing is a good job. And if you go to them and say, you know, what we're doing is whacked, we need to change it, that sounds a lot different than, you know, we've really made some improvements in this part of our company, this department, this product, this release. I think we can take this to the next step, do it broader throughout the organization. And I think similar to what I said with the parallels to open source, you know, never underestimate the cluelessness of executives. And no offense to any executives here, because if you are here, I think you're not clueless. But I think, you know, in many cases, in asking companies about their use of open source, for example, the executive will tell me, oh, we don't really use much open source. You know, oh, we use Linux and MySQL and some Tomcat. You know, Black Duck does an audit of them, and it turns out they have 1,200 open source software, you know, components, pieces in their processes or in their products. So, you know, I think that you need to recognize where there's potential and where there's actually maybe some of this stuff already happening. Because you guys are developers and ops people, you know that if you waited for approval on everything, nothing would ever happen. And so just the same way open source snuck it under the door and is now becoming more official, I could see a similar thing happening with DevOps, where it just sort of creeps in under the door, and eventually we'll start seeing official policy and official, acceptance of it.
So I guess the only thing I'd add is, you know, business executives think in terms of outcomes, business outcomes. You know, I think there's a fundamental disconnect between IT community where we think of acceptance testing, you know, it's on time, it's on budget, does what we thought as project successful. The business executive thinks, did sales go up? Are we able to convert more leads into customers? I mean, their definition of success is about a business outcome. So I think if you're trying to justify anything, you need to tie that to an outcome that they're trying to achieve. I mean, that sounds a little bit like a platitude, but you know, you really have to think in terms of what they're trying to accomplish and hitch your wagon to whatever initiative they're focused on.
Okay, so you know, Jody made the point.
Can I just add to that? Yeah. So there's been a lot of discussion about IT or operations being viewed as a cost center. And I think that's really interesting what you said, because if you take a look at what's driving the CEO or the CTO, it's really cost is one of their drivers, but for the CEO, it's probably not even a major one. Usually it's, you know, time to market and innovation and things like this. So take a look at those ideas and what those drivers for the CEO or the CTO and figure out how DevOps can enable those, not just cost.
Sure. So you guys can keep that one. So Jody and Jody mentioned about look for the thing that, you know, that's top of their mind, the squeaky wheel. Jay mentioned, a very similar concept as well. So what are the business drivers that you guys see? What are the things that are top of the mind of CEOs, CFOs, boards today that you could hang the DevOps problem around. You can draw that line to them that they see, ah, there is business value in this crazy idea, not just because a lot of us, we counsel a lot in our business and we say, look, they pay you to have headaches. And because it seems like a good idea to you, that doesn't sell well. It's going to make your life easier. It's going to make your pager go off less. That's not their problem. They pay all of us to have those headaches for them. What is the kind of business things that we should be looking at, the generic or specific cases, we should look to be hanging this DevOps problem around to really make it clear, drive it home?
Sorry, to quote John Allspaugh, make fucking graphs. And I say that because, you know, once upon a time, a long time ago, when I was actually allowed on the machines, I created a dashboard that really connected our business. So every second of every day, we would understand how much money we're making and the predicted amount of revenue we would make. And I called it the rabbit feeder because connecting the whole company with what we're trying to do, this was in the nuclear winter of the dot-com era, so money was really important then. Connecting the whole company with that, we're in business to send leads to merchants so they can create sales. You know, it's fun to create cool technology and to solve interesting problems, but we're really in the business of connecting buyers and sellers. And so by having a visible and democratizing the data about the outcomes of our business, we were really able to tie everyone in the company to those. And so our whole tech team is incentivized with uptime. And uptime is, for us, is not measured by service SLAs, right? It's measured by expected revenue versus actual revenue. And so we actually skipped ahead. We weren't smart enough to instrument all the processes. We just could watch the cash register. And when the cash register started to go down when it wasn't supposed to go down, that meant our systems were having some problems. So we've come a long way from that. But that's really, you know, we started with the end in mind, and that really served us well.
So tie your work to money.
Yeah. So the client that I'm going to slightly repeat myself, but the client that I'm working with right now, the global CIO set a goal of what he called the double-double, which means that he needs to have the time it takes to get stuff, you know, features out, things into production, because the current cycle is just too slow for their business. And he also expects that the amount of stuff they need to do is going to double. And so, you know, that's a compelling need. And I think there's some pretty clear ways that we can talk about how DevOps can help enable that. And so that's what I'm trying to do at that client.
I guess I'd add a couple of things. You mentioned like the dot-com bubble burst, and I think the timing is a big part of this. We're kind of coming out of a sustainment period with difficult economic conditions. We saw that drive a lot of open source software adoption. The risk threshold went down, as the economy did too. And now I think we're, you know, hopefully, but we are seem to be coming into a period of growth now. And so I think similar to how you see newer companies, you know, like Twitter and Facebook using some of these building blocks that are maybe a little bit new or emergent, I think a new project is more ideal than something that's, you know, tied to some of the legacy systems and processes. It affords a new opportunity to try something out new. And this is, again, where you can make a proof point. I think that one of the most important themes I've heard here today is the importance of monitoring, measuring, and tracking this stuff. Because, you know, if you can't really prove it or show that it's doing anything, it won't mean much, particularly to an executive.
And I think there's another concept, too, that helps me, you know, think through this. You know, and I think that at the high level, let me step back. At the high level, I think DevOps can be pitched as a fundamental new way of running IT that makes it business friendly. I mean, because there's a concept in business called a low-cost probe. Right? We're going to launch this product in the Cleveland market, and if it works, we're going to learn from that, and then we're going to launch it in the Eastern region and North America, and then we're going to go global. So business typically thinks in terms of more like agile development. They're going to try a little bit, see how it goes. They're going to course correct. But whereas traditional IT is more like building a satellite, right, where you have all your requirements defined up front, and then we're going to build this thing, and then we don't want to touch it. So the idea that IT has a new way of developing and releasing systems that matches more fundamentally how business runs, I think it's a great story.
Okay. So let's get some questions from the audience, and you guys don't have to answer every question. We just jump around and do whatever you got to do. Over here on the left.
You have to answer my question, though. So my head is totally exploding. It's like you did a global search and replace and said that instead of developers talking about ops or ops talking about developers, now it's DevOps talking about business. And man, those executives are stupid and they don't really understand what we do. And man, we're so awesome at this, right? This is exactly the conversation that Dev and Ops have about each other when you're not operating as a team. So, hey, look, it turns out that these folks actually know what they're doing. They just have different ways of going about it, and they talk about it in different languages, and they have different priorities from us. But they're actually expert. They actually have priorities. They actually want the right thing to happen. And that is exactly what happens with developers and operations, right? It goes from the developer saying, man, those ops guys are just a bunch of monkeys. They have no idea what my day-to-day is or how hard it is to write software. And, man, we're awesome at this. And the ops guys are saying, man, I wish they would stop making my pager go off. They're such stupid asses. They don't know anything about infrastructure. And this is the same conversation. So, the outcome of all of this should be that we recognize, hey, we're all in a business together and we need to behave like it. And let's figure out how to make that work. Step one, talk to each other.
I think that's a really good point. And it also brings up another sort of point that I wanted to make up here. And that is that we're hearing about dev, ops, IT admins and developers. But I think another big part of this is the business requirements folks. Okay, the application users, the people that determine their sort of, they're the ones that are probably going to be most capable of recognizing where an application or a process needs to go. And, I think that may be a little bit further along in this whole trend, if we can call it that. But I think that, it's adding other stakeholders. And I think you're right. There needs to be sort of a mutual respect that nobody is, better than the other group or camp. And that if we can all sort of unite on a, united an ally war effort, it'll be a lot more effective than fighting amongst ourselves.
I have one follow-on comment to that, and that second-guessing is really expensive, right? And so second-guessing people on your team is expensive. What's the point of having them on your team if you're going to second-guess them? Second-guessing your counterparts that have other specialties gets expensive. And it's this idea of trust that came up in the original culture talk that is really the foundation for that. And I think that you really can't overlook how important it is to trust those that you work with and communicate with them so that you can build that trust.
So, I try to identify and study top performers. So one of the most advanced companies I looked at was a credit union in Phoenix, right? So they process auto loans. So the app developer, the operations person, and the loan agent who's sitting at the desk or talking on the phone all were on the same team, and they were all compensated based on loan processing metrics. So, you think, oh, what does a DBA have to do with a loan, acceptance rate or whatever that business metric was? But the point was that they're all working towards a common goal and their business is processing auto loans. So everybody's variable comp was tied to the business outcome. So I think that's an interesting vision of how DevOps biz is really the goal here. So when I heard that CIO talk about him compensating his IT folks based on loans, I was like, hey, that's brilliant. That's where we're going.
So actually, a quick poll. How many folks here are compensated based on some sort of business metric that they contribute to? Are those things, is it a clear line? How many of you guys, is there a clear line between your day-to-day actions and what you do to achieve that? Or do you just hope that people, that eventually the business will figure it out and that number will go up? And maybe that's something I think folks want to come to the microphone and talk about. That would be a good thing. Brent?
I want to recommend a particular book for everybody here. It's called Leading Geeks. It's by an author named Paul Glenn. Now, it's really a book for your managers about how the people in this room think and how we view problems and the fact that we tend to view everything as a problem. And if it's a problem, therefore there must be a solution and so on and so forth. But the reason I recommend it to everybody in here, even though the supposed audience of the book is our management, is you need to teach your management the things that are in that book. It gives you ways to explain things in their terms about what you do and what you contribute and so on. For example, one of the things that's intuitively obvious to most of us and yet people outside IT have no idea about is, for us, 90% of a given job is figuring out how to do it, right? It's not, that's why it's so hard for us to say how long it's going to take to deploy some new system, is because we got to figure out how to do it. Once we figured out how to do it, we're almost done. That's not the way it is with building a building, for example. That's not the way it is with, you know, a lot of other processes. So that's just one example from that book of, you know, it can give you some language to use and some ways to explain things to people.
I got a question for you guys. So John Willis, I think, mentioned today that IT organizations tend to feel like they're measuring lots of things, and their business counterparts tend to feel like they're measuring nothing, or they have very little feedback. There's a kind of fundamental disconnect there. What are the kind of things that you think an IT organization should be measuring that the business really cares about? I mean, can we boil it down to a few, you know, KPIs that the business will consistently care about, versus the sea of metrics that we usually tend to have, you know, bubbling up from an IT organization that feels like they're measuring things adequately? I mean, what are some of the things that we should be measuring, and or maybe what's some of that disconnect that that you guys often see?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's so dependent on the organization and what kind of systems they build in many ways. Mm-hmm. I've been really fascinated to hear about the way that some organizations here in Evelocity have been able to tie their metrics to dollars so clearly. You know, when you're social media or somebody like that, you can, you know, if your system's down, you can actually count the number of dollars you lost in an hour, which is really hard to do if you're, you know, some other kind of organization. I've worked in a lot of organizations that tie is hard. I don't have a great set of standard metrics, but certainly just starting to talk to them about, you know, the amount of stuff that's getting done and into production, like how much work are you doing in what period of time? So the work, I guess a few things are work in progress. So how much stuff are you doing right now? How much stuff, how long are your release cycles? So how fast can you get things out? And how much stuff can you get out in those release cycles? That kind of information can be very helpful to the business to start to appreciate what's going on, understand the work that's being done in IT, just raise visibility about that. And then as you start to improve, they have somewhere to see that improvement happening.
So I think one of the most important measures, especially from a kind of a DevOps perspective, is time to capability. So how long does it take you to get, you know, the business wants X, how long does it take to get X in place? And so, you know, I think speed is one aspect of that, but then I think variability is another. So I think an important KPI would be, you know, how much variance is there between the time it takes, or the time that you've promised versus how long it actually took. And the more you can drive down that number or reduce the variance between your commitment and your execution, that's going to build confidence, the business confidence in IT. So I think speed is one thing, and then variability in your commitments is another.
I just have a follow-on to Kurt's comment about speed. You know, one of the things that I'm really proud about what we've built at Shopzilla is just the scaffolding around developing software. And so day one, the developers get to start working on the business problem. And, you know, they can check out a service archetype, whether it's grid-backed or database-backed. And that becomes a monitorable, configurable, manageable object that knows how to ride the rails in our world. And it takes a lot of work to build that at first. But when you start to track that time to market and you start to understand that on any given new project, you're going to spend a couple of weeks setting up this environment, well, that goes to a couple of hours. Well, that's a remarkable change, because the faster you can get that feature out in the world, the faster you can learn that that was a stupid idea, or, hey, that's the next great idea. So managing speed, and first you need to be measuring it, so make sure you have the right telemetry in your development, in your development process, and also in your operational world, but also then using that and as a metric or a goal for some of these infrastructure type work things where you need to build a continuous integration system, right? That just doesn't come for free, right? If we take some advice from like the financial advisors out there, we should be paying ourselves first. It's not unreasonable to ask for 10% of your resources to pay yourself first to build capabilities. So,
So it'd be great to hear from, you know, folks in the audience if you have any stories of this. You know, stories recently where they're good or this gone good or gone bad, trying to convince the executives to spend money or, you know, make political changes. So if you got something, step up to the microphones. But got a question over here.
Yeah, well, I wanted to go back to the earlier comment about paying everybody based on the performance of the overall system. And on one hand, I totally think that's a great idea. I think it makes sense that you should be paid based on the performance of the systems and how well you help the business achieve its goal of making money. I find it very frustrating when working for a company where you feel like you have absolutely no control over the sales, and yet your compensation is entirely tied to that. So I don't know if you have any comment on that.
So in our world, we started out with this uptime goal, and it was a shared goal across development, operations, DBA, everyone. And all is great when everyone's getting paid, right? And then when we had a quarter where we just screwed up, and we kept screwing up, and we kept blowing off our own feet where we knew we could do better. We all took a goose egg, right, on that. And it's a material component. And there was, you know, riots in the streets. The DBAs, oh, it's the app code. You know, the CM guys, oh, it's the developers. Developers, oh, it's the ops guys, right? And so the point is that we're in business together, right? And it doesn't matter whose fault it is, right? We're still all have the same common goal. And so at times we've thought about making the goals more granular. But I really think that kind of defeats the purpose. And it also would prevent us from the right level of teamwork and collaboration that really makes great organizations, you know? So it is challenging. And I saw a talk, and I don't remember who, but the biggest frustration in someone's job is that they're accountable for something or they're responsible, but they don't have control. And so I understand that frustration, but at least for us, having that same shared goal, no matter whose fault it was, as long as everyone trusts each other and knows that we're working to get better, then we seem to have mitigated those issues.
And also you kind of mentioned whose fault is it, but I think that your point also kind of addresses who gets the credit. And I think, you know, I think that's a valid concern, and I think it maybe points out that that's not always the right model, that might not work because if it could backfire on you. You know, if you say your compensation is going to be tied to, you know, our performance, our company's performance, and you feel sort of powerless in impacting that performance, you know, that's going to cause you to sort of disengage, I think. So I think that you're bringing up a point that this doesn't fit everywhere.
Well, we're, you know, at least in my company, like we're ops. Right. And we can make the trains run on time. We can make the trains run at the best. We can be 100% on time. So we say we can't exceed expectations. We can just be perfect. And yet we can't make sure that there are people on those trains because we have very little control over the knobs that, sure, that get passengers to board the trains and pay money to them. And yet at the same time, you know, if our compensation is tied to how full the trains are, we sort of get screwed in that.
Right. And how frustrating is it to have the train designed, prepped, clean, and ready, and, you know, your conductor isn't there.
But I think also you have to remember that, you know, in a business, almost every other contributing part of the business shares that same risk. And, you know, there's a history of driving their work and driving what they do, and that's sometimes how the ball bounces, and people tend to move towards the higher-performing organizations where, you know, they are contributing to that. So I think it's kind of a cop-out for IT to say, well, you know, we lose money because it was some other guy's fault. You know, then I think that IT as a group, we're not doing a good enough job drawing that line and showing how that we you know, we can actually improve that situation.
And I think that, I guess my example is kind of in, you know, there's kind of the personal MBO, you know, I'm going to go to a training class this year, or I'm going to, you know, work on something. And if I accomplish that, I'll get, that's a part of my bonus. And then there's kind of the corporate profitability, which is, you know, everybody gets, right? If the company's doing well, then the bonuses are bigger this year. And so this is somewhere in the middle, right? So you're, you know, that kind of MBO level is part of your Tiger Team outcome objective and not, you know, just a personal objective. And so the point is to try to get a business outcome that you can influence as part of your bonus structure.
here's actually one last thing I want to interject on that. I mean, how many folks here think consider themselves they're, you know, they're great at their job? They do a good job at their what they're doing. If I don't want to raise your hands, be shy, right? Wouldn't you like to be part of a place where you could be recruited to go to a place where you knew you were getting a cut of the profitability, and you know you were valued because you would go to a team where you would get paid more and compensated right along with the sales guys and the business guys and the marketing guys because you were driving that train, you know, right to the promised land. You know, I think it would be nice, right? It adds an element of risk, but the reward is also there. That's how an industry matures when the risk and reward ratios, you know, start to actually mean something, right? So I didn't mean to take away from that, but Israel.
I'm working now with a CIO who reports every week 18 metrics in terms of the important aspect of IT operations. And my head really, you know, was whirling. First time I have seen the whole 18 metrics. And I asked, well, how many of the executives to whom you report in this meeting do really get it? Is it meaningful to them? And the answer was, of course not. I mean, even he himself is hard-pressed to be able to collect those 18 metrics, and there are some people under him who understand the metrics much deeper, et cetera, et cetera. So my suggestion to the measurement thing is focus on just three simple metrics. One metric is whatever you produce, and I don't care whether this is a Ford assembly line or whether this is IT operations, focus on your outcome. If you can't focus on your outcome in terms of dollars that you bring to the business, focus on the output instead. But try to elevate yourself on the first metric from output to outcome. Second metric is quality metric. You must have a way to measure what is the quality of what you are doing, because otherwise today's success can very quickly turn into a disaster in a week or in a month or in a year. And the third one is cost. All you need to do in order to really balance your projects in IT and elsewhere is to look at the relationship between the output slash outcome, the quality, and the quality and the cost. If you are able to measure those three, and the details will differ, of course, from one IT shop to another, you have the governance frameworks that you need without going through 18 metrics or any number of metrics, which makes it NP complete.
Okay, we got less than 5 minutes left, so let's just go kind of boom, boom, one, two, and then we'll wrap things up.
Sure, just wanted to kind of share a quick war story about setting KPIs.
Sure.
So I think this there's kind of two things that we've talked about. It's trust the business and actually collaborate with them. You shouldn't have to guess what KPIs that you should be setting for your stuff to make the business happy. It's fairly easy to sit down with them and ask them that question, right? So in my last gig, myself, head of development, we went down and sat down with the business guy that was in charge of all of the web part of our business. And we had a pretty quick, you know, discussion about, so what should those KPIs be and, you know, how should we measure them? And it was, and I mean, maybe we're lucky and have a smart business guy, right? But he understood what was going on, and quickly we came out with a list of, you know, agility, time to market, right? Performance, availability, TCO, and percent of our resources we're spending on maintenance versus new features. And we got goals for all of those. And it was not a big conversation fraught with all sorts of weird psychic pain, right? I mean, it came out pretty quickly, and it provided high-level guidance that we could all work to. And I think a lot of it is just sitting down and trusting that the business person isn't going to be scratching himself when you ask them that question.
But did you guys actually have the capability to actually measure that, follow up and say, did you achieve it or not?
Yes.
That's the important part gets overlooked quite a bit.
And maybe just a comment on that, too, because I think that this kind of DevOps story, you know, I always think in terms when you get to kind of making a business case is, you know, boil it down to the cocktail party language. You know, you're at a party, you're telling somebody about DevOps. What's the story, right? So, you know, in my mind, it's a unique story because, you know, there's three primary measures in IT, you know, cost, speed, and quality, and you can put risk and some of these things in those. But, you know, you can say, hey, past approaches, sub-optimize 2 out of 3 of those, right? It could be fast and cheap, but it may not work. You know, you can pick any two, right? But I think DevOps gives you the chance to say, look, DevOps can give you all three. It can improve quality faster cheaper. And I think it's a fundamental shift that makes a good cocktail story. So I think it's an exciting story.
Okay, last question here.
So you asked for stories, et cetera, and actually mine follows very much in line with that. I found selling to managers very easy. Right? You don't sell them like metrics and all the rest of it. You sell them a vision. And you go in with a story that is very emotional and very, like, it's a vision of what the world should look like. Right? This is, the world is going to look better, and it's going to, you know, and automation is, and working with engineering, you can see very quickly if you're like the visionary CTO type person, and they think at that level, and at least for me, what I found, they just get it, right? If you go in with that, you know, this is how the world can look better.
So think, right? Steve Jobs keynote.
Kind of flippant, but yeah, kind of. Selling it to the techies has been harder for me, right? Because they're like, it takes a little bit, you know, it takes me a little bit longer to do that. Right, so maybe I'll get less done today. Right? And they just don't think about the, well, if I've automated it, then I'm not doing it at all tomorrow. And right? Because it took, you know, a day instead of 5 minutes to do it the first time. Right? The fact that it doesn't take 5 minutes every single day of the week sort of doesn't, is a little, I don't know why I found it harder to sell. So have you guys found similar stories at all, or?
That's interesting.
If I got a normal
reverse harder sell the tech than
you actually very eloquently made the biggest point that I wanted to make, which is that you don't need statistics. It's great if you have them and they really back you up, but it is about selling a vision often. And you can use war stories. It's one of the great things about going to conferences like this in Velocity is you just pick up those stories and you can tell those stories and start to set that vision. It does depend a little bit on your audience. Not every, you know, there's different personalities. So you have to kind of think about who you're talking to and who you're, I guess, selling to. But if you have an audience that's a little bit visionary, that's a little bit innovative, they will very quickly pick up on that vision. And that's what often I see when I go out and I talk to different clients is a lot of the clients, I don't really need to come in and prove to them mathematically that, you know, doing this project will save you 50%. I just tell them a couple stories about how, you know, somebody's world changed from A to B, and they go, oh, it starts to resonate with them, and they can understand it, and then they see the value that way. They don't necessarily need the math.
Great. Mini wrap-ups or any quick hits you want to toss out there?
I just wanted to say one thing, and that's that in my conversations about DevOps with a lot of the people that I think truly understand it, and just like the back of the T-shirt, this is a circular thing. And we don't call it ops dev, but it does go that way as well. And I think that's another important part of this, that it's not a linear type of thing here. This is circular, and this is, you know, going back to dev and then back to ops again. And, you know, as that keeps cycling through, it gets better and better, hopefully.
That's it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank our panel.